you get your entire annual salary in a single paycheck, and then you have to make it last until the next paycheck arrives, which is not until 1 year later.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Well, if you live in a village and you support yourself by growing and selling your crops, then the most difficult months of the year are those immediately before the harvest. You'll have used up all your savings, but the income from your crops, well, that's still weeks away. So what would be the effect of being able to borrow a small amount of additional income at this time? Gunter Fink of the Swiss Tropical Public Health Institute and Kelsey Jack of UC Santa Barbara are two of a team that tried this in Zambia, and they join me now to talk about what happened and what they discovered. So welcome to Vox Dev Talks, Kelsey.
Nice to be here.
And Gunter, welcome as well.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Kelsey, what is it about the lives of rural farmers in general that means that there is this hungry season, as it's called, before the crops arrive?
Well, I think you described it fairly well yourself. Sort of imagine you're in a situation where you get your entire annual salary in a single paycheck, and then you have to make it last until the next paycheck arrives, which is not until 1 year later. And it's not just you that's in this situation, but it's also all of your neighbors. What that means is that everybody is sort of flush at the same time of the year, but also that everybody, as you say, has really drawn down their savings account, which in this kind of setting is typically grain that they've stored from the previous harvest, or maybe a little bit of cash savings that they've put under their mattress. But as they go through the year, that gets drawn down. And because everybody's growing the same crops and everybody's getting all of their income at the same time, everybody runs out of cash and runs out of grain around the same time. And this is what gets called the hungry season. The fact that these households are, you know, in villages where everyone is experiencing these kinds of cycles means that there's this strong cyclicality and the seasonality and when people have income and when they're hungry.
So Gunter, at this time, how do they cope?
They cope in various ways. As most of us, you can ask your family, your neighbors, but as Kelsey said, those will usually not have much money. You can try to sell some livestock, but of course you would rather not do that. So what we really saw that is happening a lot is people sell their labor. So instead of just borrowing from somebody, you go on other people's farms, ideally families that have a bit more money than you, and say, hey, do you have some work for me? And you essentially leave your farm, sell yourself for a day or two, and with that money, buy some food or buy whatever you need most urgently. And this is what we call ganyu labor, this predefined piecewise jobs that you do for a day to make just a bit of money to pay whatever is most urgently needed.
In economics, we talk about smoothing consumption, borrowing a bit of money to tide us over times when we are spending more than we're earning. Why do these farmers not already do this?
They don't borrow money largely because there's just not a lot of opportunities to borrow money. So in other times of the year, a lot of the borrowing that we see is between friends and neighbors. But as we've been discussing, during the hungry season, most of your friends and neighbors are also poor. And so it's a difficult time of the year to be able to borrow informally. Money lenders come in from outside of the village and offer loans at very, very high interest rates. So we saw interest rates of up to 100% per month. Wow. And so households may have to resort to money lenders in an emergency, but they're certainly not going to borrow at that kind of rate just to finance consumption. So it's really just a lack of borrowing opportunities that prevent borrowing. But I think we'll get into this. One of the things that we see with the labor sales happening where households that have already drawn down their resources from the previous harvest or selling labor to households that still have some resources available, what they're in effect doing is borrowing from their own future harvest, because what we were able to document in this study is that by selling labor to others, you're actually underinvesting in your own farm and hurting your own future harvest. So it's a form of borrowing. It's not the kind of borrowing that we're used to, But it's still this trade-off over time that households are making where they're deciding, do I want some income today from selling my labor, or do I want some income tomorrow from putting my labor onto my own fields? So they're not borrowing in the way that we're used to, but there is this kind of trade-off between income today and income tomorrow that's kind of consistent with how we think about borrowing.
Let's describe what you did in Zambia. As I understand it, you experimented by granting lower cost loans during this hungry season to a group of farmers. Tell me about these farmers, first of all. What sort of crops are they growing? How precarious is their life at this time?
So these are practically very small farmers. So don't think mm-hmm. of industrial farming here. This is small scale, mostly subsistence farming. We're talking about 5 acres, maybe 3 hectares of land where you do all the work manually. So it's really the family doing all the labor without machines or even without oxen. So it's really manual labor. And the plant mix or crop mix is quite diverse. Everybody grows maize because that's what people like to eat in the form of nshima, but then they grow a whole range mm-hmm. of things, sweet potatoes, cotton, groundnuts. Many farms grow up to 5 different crops. Their lives, I would say, are quite precarious. It's small farms. Even if the season goes well, if the harvest goes well, they are below any international poverty line. Like, these are not farms that will ever live well, but they live decently, I would say, for a few months of the year, and then they really struggle in the season that we are talking about here.
And Kelsey, on what terms are you offering these loans? I'm guessing that it's less than 100% a month.
It is. It was far less than 100% a month. So the loans that we offered, the idea was to give households enough resources to really do consumption smoothing, to give them enough that they could eat to get through the hungry season. And so the start of the hungry season is typically around January. We offered the equivalent of 3 bags of maize, which we calculate is about enough to cover staple consumption needs for a family of 5 for about a month. So certainly this wasn't meant to cover all of their consumption, but it was meant to be enough to help them get through the approximately 3 months of the hungry season. The interest rates over the 6-month loan, so they were borrowing in January, repaying in June or July, was 3 bags of maize at the beginning, repay 4 bags of maize, so about a 30% interest rate over the 6-month period. For us, that seems very high relative to loans that are locally available. This was a very, very favorable deal. We actually had 2 treatment arms. In some cases, households were given the loan in the form of maize. In other cases, they were given the loan in the form of cash. So we were interested in understanding whether there was a difference in how households used the resources that were provided through this loan, if it was provided in the form of food versus in cash. It's much cheaper and easier to lend in cash than it is to transport, you know, bags of maize to rural areas. On the flip side, we heard concerns early on that if you give people cash during this time, they may not use it as well. They may not use it as responsibly. It may disappear quite quickly. And so we tried to study, to use this design to also study, using the same terms of the loan, whether the modality of lending made a difference in terms of the impacts.
So tell me about that difference. How was this loan used? How did it change the behavior of the farmers who were able to borrow from you?
I guess to start with the point that Kelsey just ended on, like, we did not see any evidence of wasteful consumption. You know, this notion that you give these poor families some cash and they will run off and just squander it right away. Like, we didn't see any evidence of additional alcohol or nicotine consumption. What we saw, and which I think was maybe the main insight of the paper, is that people actually used that money to reallocate labor. Like, we saw that people were not only selling less of their labor to other farms, but sometimes even hiring some of their neighbors to get more of their farm work done and to actually achieve better harvesting outcomes, which we thought was quite striking.
Longer term, was there an effect then on their incomes?
So we saw that, as Gunter described, by moving family labor from the market back onto their own farms, that harvest that year went up by about, I think, about 9% on average, which was enough to cover the value of the loan on average. So, you know, in a sense, that gives you some order of magnitude of how much the returns on money at that time of the year actually are. So we saw impacts on incomes during the same agricultural season that the consumption smoothing was provided. And so really that flows through this labor channel that households are increasing labor investments. And so labor is the biggest input in agricultural production in this setting. As Gunter said, people are not really using animal labor or anything like that. So it's really family labor is the main thing they're using. So when they could increase the amount of family labor, that actually had a positive impact on harvest. We did follow these families to see if there was a persistent effect, right? So if you increase harvest income a little bit this year, does that mean you have to do less Ganyu labor the next year? And there's kind of a, you know, persistent effect in that sense. And we didn't see that these impacts were large enough to have that kind of persistent impact. There's also a lot of turnover of who is the household that is really at the bottom of the ladder in one year selling their labor, and who is at the, you know, the subsequent year, they may not be in that same kind of situation just for idiosyncratic reasons.
This would be an intervention that would have to be repeated year on year, but the results you're getting seem to be great news for the farmers involved, but it also seems to have some aggregate effect on the efficiency of farming. Can we make that calculation if it was scaled up to all the farmers that are in this position? I imagine that's quite a lot. Would there be some kind of aggregate impact here?
It's a good question. It's a tough question. We tried to simulate what would happen, because in our experiment, of course, we gave these subsidies to only some farmers, or these loans. So if you would do this to everybody, the first order effect would, of course, be that everybody would want to sell labor less and hire labor more, which would increase wages. There would be some efficiency gains. They would probably be slightly smaller than the 10% number or 9% number that Kelsey gave you, but there would be quite a bit of redistribution, because this primarily would help the weakest of the farmers, because they would sell less and benefit from the higher wages. And there would potentially actually be slightly less profit for the high end of the distribution. So it's both for everybody at the aggregate level in terms of efficiency gains, but it's also quite a bit of redistribution towards the poorest of the farming families.
We do really see this effect, that a lot of the inefficiency currently comes from low-income households selling labor to higher-income households, those who have more resources available. Because these are very small labor markets, that means that because some households are hungry, they're willing to sell their labor because they need income today at lower wages. This is some extra supply of labor during the time of the year, during the hungry season, mm-hmm. which has this depressing effect on wages. It lowers wages in the local village labor market. Because the households with more resources are the ones doing most of the hiring, this is basically a transfer from the lower income households to the higher income households, because the high income households are able to hire labor at a lower wage, the lower income households are receiving less income. So when you intervene during the hungry season, give some resources, that has the biggest effect on the households who are doing most of the labor sales. And so one of the other results that we saw is that that drives up local wages, which means that for the households that are still continuing to sell labor, they have to sell less to meet their immediate consumption needs. So there's a strong redistribution effect. As this gets scaled up, what we would expect to see is that wages increase even more. And so that, again, pulls some people back into the labor market, because the wages are higher, there's a stronger incentive to sell your labor. But the redistribution value really still persists. So the main thing as you scale this up is that you get a reduction in inequality within the village, where you have a less of a wedge between those who are still doing well during the hungry season and those who are doing quite poorly during the hungry season.
On Vox Dev Talks, we have covered microfinance, small loans, many, many times. It has been a focus of development economics for many, many years. And one thing that consistently comes across is that for the lowest income households, the sort of households that we're talking about today, it has been less useful and has been less taken up. Why are your results so different in this respect?
It's a great question, and it's one that we've spent a lot of time thinking about. There are a few things that are different. One is that by taking into consideration households' financial flows, and in particular the seasonality of the financial flows, mm-hmm. that this intervention was able to really inject cash resources at the time of the year when they're at their highest value. and then collect those resources back from people at the time of the year when the value of those resources are a bit lower because people have had most of their income. So by taking advantage of the difference across seasons in this agricultural setting, I think that is one sort of important and key difference. And as you hinted at, the take-up rates that we saw were extraordinarily high, basically like 97-98% of farmers that were offered these loans took them up, which is a completely different result than you get in most of the microfinance literature. So that already, I mean, we think of that, we talk about revealed preferences, that's already telling us something about the fact that from the household's perspective, this is an extraordinarily valuable loan for them because everybody wants it. So that's already some evidence that there's something different about this kind of a loan. The other really important difference is that these were loans to finance consumption. That's just not something you see in microfinance because typically we don't think that consumption is profitable. But because of these distortions that we see, again, given the seasonality in when people have resources and when they don't, we see these distortions to labor that are driven by the need for consumption. Labor, of course, is productive. And so this is actually one of the perhaps rare, I don't know, perhaps rare cases where consumption is actually having these productivity benefits. So these are conjectures. I think we haven't tested exactly what's different about this, but I think that those are some of the descriptive things that differ between our setting and a typical microfinance setting.
Given this revealed preference, it's so strong. The demand is obviously so great. Can we look at this from the other end then and think about how an experiment like this, a context like this, might give us some clues as to how to make microfinance more relevant for these types of people?
I think there's two aspects which I think are important. Like number one is maybe the importance of rural credit and not just for rural business, but actually for rural consumption, and especially in the context of agriculture, like our results suggest that there is demand and also willingness to repay these loans. So maybe it's in a way like an untapped market that I think should be considered. And the second point, I think, is really the importance of timing. I think Kelsey already mentioned this, but I'm quite confident if we had given out loans in June after the harvest and repayment in January, it would have failed. So I think taking financial flows and income structure into account when you design these programs, I think it's an important lesson from this project, which I think can also be applied to other settings.
It's a very interesting experiment. It's one of those things where when you see the results from it, you think, oh, of course, but it is not quite so obvious before you do it. Thank you for talking about it today. Thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you.
And thank you, Gunter, as well.
Thank you.
The paper is called Seasonal Liquidity, Rural Labor Markets and Agricultural Production. It was published in the American Economic Review in November 2020, so you can find it there. The authors are Gunter Fink, Kelsey Jack, and Felix Messia. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. But remember, if you go to voxdev.org, you will find all our past episodes, and you'll also find articles about the papers we feature.